Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour, December 22nd, 2016, and pre-Christmas show. That's what I'm doing tonight. A lot of topics. I'll be talking about Joseph of Arimathea. Who was he? Some very interesting issues. There's a new book out giving the lineage of Christ, and that's a very interesting topic in itself. Something I've discussed and something that has been somewhat sorely lacking in discussions of Christianity itself. I'll also be talking about the Trump presidency as we see it coming here, and all the foolishness seems to be waning, although I think the opposition, so to speak, the people that lost by a tremendous amount in this election. And no, the Trump did not lose the popular vote. When they did the little bit of recounting that was done, he gained hundreds of thousands of votes in those three states, and that's why they really stopped it, because it was looking pretty pathetic. Some cities, like, for example, by the way, if you hear some noise behind me, I'm not in my normal beautiful studio tonight due to some technical issues. I get the feeling that there's some people out there that may not want me to be heard. But anyway, you may hear a bit of noise in the background. Nothing to worry about. But the what's coming here is very positive. And so I don't even want to dwell or concentrate on the foolishness. The Russians did it. The Russians ate my homework. You know, whatever else people are coming out with. But just briefly, the CIA and these intelligence agencies are shaking in their boots, as they should be, because the new sheriff in town is going to throw their lousy behinds out of Dodge. That's what's going on. So they're trying to fight. They're trying to kick and scream. And I always said when and if and when this happens, the regime change that gets away from the insanity that we've been dealing with. In fact, things have been so crazy, people have begun to think that that's normal. That's the way it's supposed to be, and it's not at all the way it's supposed to be. So when you see something normal coming in and the old guard kicking and screaming as they're tossed out of Dodge, yeah, that's expected. So just part of the deal. The Christmas comet, I'll be talking about that a little bit. But first of all, Antarctic activity. There is a lot of activity in Antarctica right now. There are thousands and thousands of scientists and other people. We really don't know who all is down in South America or in the South Polar region. But it's very clear that they probably hit the mother lode of some archaeological finds, and therefore all of the activity. The problem is these people are going to mess it up before any real people can get in there. The archaeologists and these closed circles that go in and rape these areas before it's really available for open study and try and, anyway, it's just going to be one of those major disasters in the making. It's like NASA polluting Mars and other planets in the solar system by sending spacecraft there that have not been decontaminated. And that's just another example of modern research by government-funded entities that cut corners and really are not doing anybody any favors. So when we go out to Mars, how do we know that the Viking landers or the little guys running around up there full of earth-laden bacteria and viruses and dust particles and who knows what all, dropping it around on planet Mars, and then the type of aberrations that occurred, mutations, etc. So this deal at the South Pole is just another example of some people in there, some frothing at the mouth, greedy, New World Order, secret society people, John Kerry included, those people who will, they're just destroy. They destroy everything they touch because they don't know anything. They're idiots. So that's what's happening at Antarctica. We don't really know, but that's a good educated guess. Somebody on a radio show a few weeks ago, and I was guest, asked me if it could be that they were looking at Nibiru. And the answer is no, that the optical telescopes, infrared telescopes at the South Pole are not functional now because we're in the dead of summertime. You know, in the wintertime, Europe, in the northern climates, you think now it's wintertime, but at the South Pole, it's literally, yesterday was the 21st, the winter solstice, which in the northern hemisphere is the shortest day of the year. Well, it's the longest day of the year at the South Pole, where you have literally midnight sun, you have 24-hour sun. So, no, not a good time to be down there trying to peek through a telescope. And there's no point in putting radio telescopes at the South Pole because you can put radio telescopes any place. You don't need nighttime to see with a radio telescope and observe. So, no, this is not about something about Nibiru. And by the way, just an aside, over decades, past decades, people have always come to me when there's been a bogus, you know, Planet X or Nibiru announcement, or when I released my document on July 23rd, 2015, the 20th anniversary of the discovery of Hale-Bopp, showing how the nucleus of Hale-Bopp was literally the Harrington Planet X object, which he discovered. And so anyway, that's why there was all of that misinformation about Planet X. That's where the disinformation campaign coming out of the CIA for crazy lady talks to aliens, etc., where all that came from. But here is the good news. And there's going to be a lot of good news tonight on this show. So unfortunately, in past years, we've had a lot of terrible news. Science has just been squashed like a bug under the massive repressive arms and fingers of NASA, the CIA, and the FAA, and that's changing, I'm very happy to say. But the other thing as part of this I'm just going to announce now is that part of my effort is to have my own personal Planet X search program. And this will be based not on planet Earth, but in outer space. And that's one of the exciting announcements tonight. And this is so exciting. I'm really excited that Trump is president. Oh, my goodness. When you see what's going on here, for example, in the past 5 weeks or so since the election, over a trillion and a half, not a billion and a half, this is with a T, a trillion and a half dollars have been committed to high-tech development and investment in the United States from foreign companies, from entities that are companies in the United States that moved a lot of their money off into foreign locations and to get away from the tax structure that has killed American business. And they know that Trump is a businessman. The people he's hiring are highly motivated business people, and they know that the movement of money is what makes things tick. You're going to see, because of the success that's already happening, and Trump isn't even president yet, you're going to see the absolute incredible acceleration of wealth, of research, of science, of engineering that's going to come along with it. And so I've been waiting since 1980 for this to happen, and now it's happening. Let me just give you an example here. It was yesterday or the day before, Obama trying to create a legacy for his presidency, made a presidential directive to ban oil production in the Arctic. Now, this is an environmental issue, and that's true. But if you look at the environmental disaster that has occurred in the Mideast due to oil production and around the world, and due to the environmental disaster, which is the shipping of oil from the Mideast or from wherever over to the United States, where it's then refined and made into gasoline, if you offset the environmental problems, then there's no comparison. We should be getting all of our energy at home. So Trump is doing this, and now people will be saying, well, gee, we don't want all that pollution here. Well, we all live on planet Earth, okay? So let's stop the idea that pollution over there is good, no pollution here is good, or that pollution here is bad. That's a mixed message. And so literally what Trump is doing is, first of all, making us energy independent, which is going to get rid of all of the reasons for wars. And remember, they're not, oil is not the reason for war. The Israeli conquest of the Mideast is the real reason for war. And oil just happens to be a player in the middle, because oil and energy run the world. But if you understand where energy is going, in 10 to 20 years, we will not be using coal, nuclear, or oil, or gasoline, derivatives of oil, petrol, at all. And so the whole idea of maintaining or proclaiming that the Antarctic is immune to oil extraction is in a sense absurd. It's nonsensical, unless you're in a world that's forcing the public to accept oil as a primary form of transportation energy. And that's where Obama stands. Now, if you step back and look at the bigger picture, which Trump understands, we're not going to be using oil and coal and nuclear in 20 years. Get rid of nuclear. It's the biggest polluter on the planet. Anybody that thinks that nuclear energy is clean, just because you look at that smokestack and all that's coming out is steam, what's coming out the bottom side is nuclear radiation. Every single one of the United States' 104 online nuclear reactors, every single one of them is leaking, some worse than others. Biscayne Bay in Florida, leaking horribly into the environment there, still operating, no sanctions at all. So if you understand where the world has to go, you understand that preventing or allowing pipelines to exist or to be built is not the issue. We have enough oil in this country, and if we're conservative, to run all of our energy needs. So we have to stop thinking with the paradigms of the past, because they don't work. They're nonsensical. Like I say, the idea that we should not pollute our environment, but it's okay to pollute over in China, in the Mideast, and in other countries like, say, Venezuela or Canada right next door, where they're taking up tar sand and causing tremendous, unbelievable amount of environmental damage, irreversible, and saying it's okay because it's up there in the middle of Canada, out of sight, out of mind. That's absurd. So at any rate, the idea of allowing drilling and exportation of oil within our own hemisphere is a good idea. But the other idea, and something I'm working on finally is coming to fruition, is the wind generator. Because with the wind, remember that the three-blade wind generator that's out there, you see them all over the place, and solar panels will never, ever solve our energy needs. And I've given information regarding that in my book, McCanny Wind Generator World Energy Project. So I'm not going to repeat it here. Okay, so I'm talking a little bit more on this topic than I wanted to. But the good news is that in the future, the investment into science and technology, just think of things like batteries. The head of, I think it was Boeing, came online, and also the head of, the head of the European Union's Airbus company said that he fully expects within 5 years we'll be flying passenger jets completely electric. Okay, so if you can take and create a sufficient amount of wind energy from the wing generator and then fly the jets around with electric power, then, I mean, that's a win-win situation, but the critical component here is batteries. The battery improvement, they expect to double, triple, quadruple, quintuple, or whatever in the next 5 years, to the point where the weight goes down, the energy, expendable energy, the usable energy per unit weight is going to increase greatly. In other words, they're going to become more efficient, in layman's terms. And this is going to happen in the next 5 years. There's groundbreaking things going on all the time, and also the price coming down dramatically. So electric cars, etc., the thing we got to get away from is the use of nuclear, coal, and oil, petrol, as the basis, converting heat into energy, which then is then used for propulsion or transportation or whatever, is a very, very bad idea. High energy content fuels is a very inefficient way to create energy. Also, transportation of energy is very costly. It takes 15% of the oil in the oil tanker just to move the oil from where it comes in the Mideast over to the United States. 15% of that right off the top is used just to move it. Think about that. And you know, if we start getting our oil locally, we're going to have to wean ourselves off of those three major sources of energy. And so anyway, I'm doing my part and trying to get this operation running on my end with the wing generator. But over time, we have to get away from this idea of the centralized power company, where the centralized power company controls the voltage. Anyway, that's once again in my book, McCanny Wing Generator, World Energy Project, the second half of producing energy from the wind that blows 24/7 all points of the earth, north, south, south pole to the north pole at the equator and every place else, day and night. Wind energy very available, and the use of that to power our needs and then wean ourselves off of this high energy content fuel, coal, nuclear, and petrol. Okay, so at any rate, all of these things coming down the line, and the thing that's going to open this up is getting rid of regulations, federal regulations, forcing us into this oil-based economy, okay? So start, you know, all of you tree huggers out there, you know, keep on hugging the trees, but get a brain and understand that the way of the future, we first have to become energy independent, and then we have to wean ourselves off of the dependence on local energy sources, high energy content fuels. Get away from that, and that is the future. And I'll be talking more about going into outer space. So remember that we've been artificially kept in this box by all of these paradigms, which are completely false. But the other thing about Obama signing this presidential directive, the first day Trump gets into office, he will unsign it. And so, like I say, you have to understand that this is a good thing in the long term. Remember that creating conflict is how a lot of people make money. The CIA, the old military-industrial complex, hey, if there's no conflicts, they're not going to make money. That's what they're worried about. They're not worried about peace in the Mideast or anything else. They're worried about the possibility that there won't be any conflicts, and that the gravy money train that they're on is going to end, and that all of a sudden they're going to have to switch to a peace economy. They don't know how to do it. They don't know how to create money peacefully. That's the old guard, and they're dying. They're going away. Bye-bye. Merry Christmas 2016. And all of their efforts to try and sidetrack Trump have gone away. And like I said before, if you're listening to this show and you're going, oh, but I support Hillary Clinton, you know, turn the radio off, please, or your computer, whatever you're listening on, and go away. I don't want you in my audience. If you're that stupid, you don't know the criminality of these people. I'm not going to go into that. But I only need people who are moving into the future in a positive sense, and I'll be talking a lot about that in the next few minutes. But if you're still stuck in that old paradigm, then go away, dig a hole, and jump in, please. And with that, I'm going to leave the past and move into the positive future. A number of weeks ago, I announced on my radio show the Comet 45P Honda Marcos Pajusakova. And so, at any rate, we had the December 13 alignment with Mercury. And anyway, I did not particularly have time to look at that. And then we have now this coming Monday through Wednesday, December 26th to the 29th, we have this comet aligning with Venus with a broadside view from Earth. So very interesting. So at any rate, in the evening sky, if you look up very high in the evening sky when the sun's going down, look up in the west, and very high you see this huge bright thing. It looks amazingly big. It looks like a giant planet, and that's what it is. It's our nearest neighbor, Venus. And to the inside of it is a small comet. So the possibility that you might see with binoculars, Venus going comet. Now, you can also see the comet just about a third of the way towards the sun from Venus. So you may be able to see some comet-like activity around the planet Venus. Now, you have to be careful that there are no clouds or anything like that to distort your visibility. But that's for most people, that'll be kind of a far stretch, but you should be able to see the comet and Venus in a good set of binoculars. But here's, once again, the real issue. And let me talk first about February 11th. It's the actual closest approach of this comet to Earth. And really, it's going to be quite far away, about 20 lunar distances, I believe, but there's no electrical alignments associated. The dates to note are January 29th, that's January 29th, 2017, to February 4th. And that is where this little comet is going to be out to the sunward side of Earth. And with a very good electrical alignment, we could see some serious weather. Remember last year, early in the year, we had a hurricane. Well, this year, we could possibly see one in this time frame from January 29th to February 4th, or some severe, unseasonable weather. And, of course, the wintertime, you can always get severe weather. But if we start seeing hurricanes during that time frame, then we can also track with satellite data and other forms of ionospheric data and ground data of Earth to track this back to actually show that it's due to this comet. And we've seen, of course, innumerable times where I predicted comet activity. But we could call this our Christmas comet. And that brings up a very interesting point. Many, many years ago, and I can't even remember what year it may have been, I was on a show with a guy named Brad Walton, since deceased, a good friend of mine, and these people, there's just some names, Brad Walton and Bill, my good friend Bill has passed away. All these people, I wish they were here, I could talk to them and wish them on the air or something like that. But I know they're all looking down and with a big smile on their face, looking at what I do and what my continuing work is going on. But so many people that have passed away over the years, over the decades that I've been doing my work, and I know they're all up there smiling and as I carry on here. But I was on a show with Brad Walton, and it was the Christmas special where we did talk about the Christmas star. And so anyway, the fact that the Christmas star was a comet was the whole point of the show. And I went on for, I think we did 2 hours. It was broadcast live from WCCO Radio in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And we recorded it. So it was a show that I can post. Unfortunately, I don't have a copy of that with me right now. But that's one of my intentions. I'll make a note here to post that show, that the Christmas star was in fact a comet, and it has all of the properties of a comet. So in a lot of times you see a picture of the nativity scene with the Christ child and the little cave dwelling basically where he was born with a comet-like star over it. And that's literally what happened. And there's a reason for that. So anyway, there's a reason why comets are associated with certain major events in human history. But that's not the point of tonight's show. I could go on and on about that. But we do have, in a sense, a Christmas comet here with Comet 45P Honda Marcos. But as I said, December 26th, you could go out and see it aligned with Venus, waiting till the end of January, January 29th to February 4th in the next year, to affect Earth weather and possibly some psychological effects on people living on Earth. We know that that happens also, but not negative, mind you, not negative. It's just that you may feel differently. You may have a sense of possibly oneness with the universe. It's hard to say, but all of it positive, nothing negative. This comet has no possibility of severe interaction with Earth. I might put it that way. But when you start having severe weather, if it happens to be where you are, then it could be possibly a major event in your life. But overall, I'm not seeing this as a major problem. And by the way, it's not coming close to have any of the effects like gravitational or pole shifts or any of the other things like that. So don't allow anybody to misquote me on that. It's just that on that period of time, we're having an electrical alignment, and these type of things happen all the time with planetary alignments and solar flares. It's not major. It's just something to keep an eye out for. So who was Joseph of Arimathea? And now I'm sure people who are regular listeners to my show are familiar with the Colburn. The Colburn is a series of books that had been passed down through the ages through a group called the Chaldean Trust. And there's a whole story that goes along with that. But there's a whole story that goes with that. And there's actually a new book out. Let me just give a reference to this because it's really a wonderful book. I've not read it all myself. I've seen bits and pieces of it. But it's something you may want to take a look at when you have time. It deals with the lineage, some of the more esoteric topics dealing with the lineage of Christ, ancestors of Christ, etc. Okay, it'll take me a second to change screens here. So the name of the book, Unraveling the Family History of Jesus by Stephen Donald Norris, with an N, N-O-R-R-I-S, and something that... a topic that's very important, understanding the lineage of Christ. So, but also in there, of course, is mentioned Joseph of Arimathea, who is uncle to Jesus. He was actually a great uncle. I actually believe he was a great uncle to Mary. But remember, in those times, the generations were much closer packed than ours. People did not marry, wed at the old ages that people do typically in modern society. They were wed sometimes by age 13. So the generations rolled over, and many times you'd have three or four generations alive at the same time. But Joseph of Arimathea, Christ spent a good deal of time with him, traveling, understanding, and it was Joseph of Arimathea's library that he took with him after the crucifixion. He took the cross, he took the chalice, he took the a lot of other artifacts and his library to England. Joseph of Arimathea was a very wealthy Roman businessman who spent a lot of his time in England because of the metallurgy business that he was involved in. Anyway, Christ went with him and learned a lot. And understood, you can tell from Christ's teachings that he understood the history of the true history of the world. And so dealing with literally the comets, etc., the ancient disasters related to comets. And so when he gave his end time prophecies and he talked about look up in the heavens, look for the signs in the heavens, the stars will seem to fall from the sky, the firmament will be shaken. Well, he's talking about the big comets. Yeah. By the way, this is what I talked about on my paid cast last week. You may want to give that a listen. It was, what, the December 15th episode of my weekly paid cast. It was the in the series, The World Before the Great Flood, the topic, what is missing from the Old Testament Bible between Noah and Moses? So that's a very interesting show in which I discuss a lot of these issues. And by the way, race is an issue that's missing from the Bible that was originally described in the Bible. So I talk about that and the fact that a lot of this is being suppressed in modern day life by the people who don't want you to know who you are, where you came from. But back to Joseph of Arimathea, Christ spent a good deal of time with him and so obviously learned a lot of the issues from those old books. Those books were then saved through trusts through the ages and eventually translated into some related languages and ultimately into English, which was the native language of the people that worked on these in the early 1990s. I was one of the first people to have a copy of the Colburn in the United States, and I received permission to quote the E. Colburn, and that resulted in my book, Atlantis to Tesla, The Colburn Connection. And I also talk about the fact that I was, when I released that book, this is a little historical note, when I released that book, I did so, well, on the Coast to Coast AM radio show, which went ballistic. It went in absolutely into orbit that night, and it had pre-sold quite heavily before people even knew the title. But when people heard the title, it just went off the charts. And then I gave also a talk at Laughlin, Nevada at the UFO Congress regarding that book, which was attended by a lot of high-level scientists. So at any rate, a little bit of history there. But Joseph of Arimathea, a very interesting guy. And but his library, very rich in history, and that's why the Romans wanted to destroy it. This book has been under attack since day one, since prehistory. But the point is that back around the time of Christ, the wealthy people, they knew the world was round. They knew the ancient history, the ancient disasters, the issues dealing with comets coming through the solar system and creating major disasters, the Venus event, the Moses event, the Noah event, which were all related to comets, etc. But at any rate, Joseph of Arimathea happened to be Christ's uncle, and what an influential person. But you can see in the book also, which is strictly coming at this topic from a completely hereditary point of view, genetics or lineage point of view, where he places Joseph of Arimathea in a key position in the lineage of Christ. So anyway, that's a very interesting story to be to understand around Christmas time. Who were Christ's relatives, etc.? And don't let anybody tell you that this was a fake story or anything else. This is all well-documented history. But there's a lot of people out there who would try and talk differently about it. These are very complicated issues when you start talking. You can talk about faith, etc., and understanding and believing certain topics. But it's a very, when you start getting into real historical study and putting these pieces of the puzzle together, which I have done, and in terms of, say, going all the way back to Atlantis, and then coming all the way forward to Tesla. By the way, this week's paid cast story, as long as I'm talking about Tesla, this week's paid cast is in the continuing series, Tesla's Mind. What Tesla did not know. What did Tesla not know? Well, there's a lot of things he did not know. And putting him into historical perspective is important. What did we learn afterwards? what did I learn when I rebuilt Tesla's work and studied and put it together with my own intricate knowledge of the physics of the solar system, the electrical nature of the solar system, the plasma discharge comet model, the electrical nature of the ionosphere relative to Earth. What did Tesla not know, and how did he accomplish all that he did by not knowing many of the things we know about today? The solar wind, he did not know about that. Anyway, I'm not going to give it away, but that's the paid cast for tonight, along with tonight's show. So anyway, you may want to join that, $3.95 a month. But on to the topic of Christmas. The Christmas star was a comet, no question about that. It's a very important comet, and it had very specific characteristics. One of the things I did talk about when I gave my two-hour discussion was that the Christmas comet, the Christ comet, was a very special comet, and it was predicted. The three magi had seen this probably years before. Remember, Hale-Bopp was in the sky. The last time Hale-Bopp was here was 4,500 years ago. But it had a very characteristic companion. And what would make a comet so characteristic that out of all time it would be unmistakable as the Messiah comet? It would be the fact that it was a triple comet, not a double comet, because they can be somewhat common, but a triple comet. In other words, a comet with two companions. And that's my estimate for what was so starkly, profoundly unique about this, to take three kings who knew these ancient prophecies to start from different countries, unacknowledged, unbeknownst to the other ones, and meet. And you would think that if two kings maybe got together and knew the history, etc., that might be one thing. But for three of them, that's too hard for circumstance, for happenstance. So there's so many things about this Christmas comet. They saw it in the east, but they followed it to the west. You see what I mean? These are all characteristics of comets. And so the Christmas star is very definitely, and they had to follow it for years. Modern science wants to pretend that this was a planetary alignment, possibly of Jupiter or Jupiter-Venus or a visual alignment. Well, those alignments only last for a couple hours and maybe a day or two at most. But when they're actually close, in a close alignment, it's very short. And also it's a very common thing. So it's not something that would raise some king's attention in a foreign land to get up, pack all his bags, and spend years traveling across the open desert to try and find this magi. So at any rate, The Christmas star, definitely a comet, but a very unique comet. My estimation was that it was a comet with two companions, very distinct, something that you could not mistake, and something that when the Magi saw that, the three kings, they packed their bags and started moving. And remember, it took them, it wasn't like a drive across the desert in Abu Dhabi or Dubai in your Rolls Royce, your gold-plated Rolls Royce, or Mercedes-Benz. This was a journey by camel, and you have to take all your supplies with you. It took a long time to prepare, a long time to put this together, a long time to travel. And following this star that they saw in the east, but followed it to the west. Very interesting. But Joseph of Arimathea, very key person, I talk about him a lot in my I also talk about these topics in my two CD set, the Physics of Planet X and Ancient Celestial Disasters. Okay, simply to round out my Christmas message, and I'm going to get on to what Trump has already done for science. And this is very important for me as a scientist. You know, talk about waiting for the Messiah. As a scientist, I have been, since the beginning of my career and before, but say I was at Cornell University 1979 to 1980, discovering my work on the electrical nature of the solar system, the plasma discharge comet model, the induced electric dipole redshift, the the capture system of planetary development, of solar system development, the subtleties of charge to mass ratio in the electrical nature of the universe. It's on and on and on. Dozens of discoveries that I came up with. But what I did is I met an absolute brick wall. Then, along with my discoveries dealing with the theoretical work, I also designed two propulsion systems. You can see one of them that was published in the IEEE. I gave a talk on this at many places, closed meeting with the military, the 19th International Electric Propulsion Conference in Colorado Springs, and then at the Air America Space Air Show in California, that was down in San Diego, and other places, as I introduced one of the propulsion systems to the military. Also, that's why I was in California, in Los Angeles in 1982, looking for venture capital for my space projects. And that's when I hit what I call the secret society. So when I wrote my book, Atlantis to Tesla, The Colburn Connection, one of the topics I break in that book is the secret societies that have gone way back in history that have run the world for thousands of years, instigating conflict, creating chaos within governments, toppling regimes, creating the world banking system and its usury fees and interest, which is totally illegal in all of the old ancient texts, running the world like a slave ship. And I met these people. I met them all wearing suits, all supposedly dignified businessmen and scientists, etc. And that's where I realized that something was drastically wrong in the world of engineering and science in outer space, etc. And that's where I ran into the black ops and black ops scientists and the black op industry, the skunk works, because my project was very advanced. It was a very advanced propulsion system, electromagnetic propulsion, non-inertial propulsion system. And so at any rate, that led me down a road where I realized that the world is not as I thought it was, as I was taught when I was being trained as a scientist. So at any rate, I got quite an education, as they say, getting kicked around the block sometimes is a form of education. And that's exactly what happened. So literally, since that time, I have been doing my science independently and working under the severely oppressive regimes of NASA, the Federal Aviation Administration, the CIA, which took over science, especially space science and high technology in 1991, all of this being taken over, and for the direct repression of the citizens. All of the NASA stuff you see is simply a smokescreen. The space shuttle was a smokescreen. The alleged rocket development was a smokescreen. The Cold War was a smokescreen to keep, look at what Reagan did. He thought he was going to go out and solve the world's problem by creating space, or the Star Wars program, which took literally almost brought the United States down to its knees economically. It was a terrible program economically because of the extreme cost. And believe me, none of these defense programs are cost effective, because as soon as you get done with it, or before you're even done with it, the other side has developed a countermeasure to counter it. So ultimately, war ends up being the man on the street, the guy in the boot with an armed rifle in a war. And for nobody, there's really no winners in warfare except the people that make a lot of money off of it. And that's the only way they know how to make money. And that's what they've done forever, keeping people on the ground, in the dirt, stupid, keeping the economy low so poor kids have one choice and only one choice, and that's to become somebody in the military who goes and gets their butt shot off so that some rich guy can make money off the latest economic trend, whether it's oil, whether it's water, whether it's resources of some other kind, whatever. Okay, so the I have lived under this oppression, and especially the monopoly of NASA scientists who have outdated theories. Now, remember, around prior to 1991, the scientists at NASA, who I knew, JPL, Los Alamos, etc., they really believed the Dirty Snowball Comet model. That was the reigning model at the time. I had come in 1979 and said, no, this isn't true at all. It's a plasma discharge of the solar capacitor. I showed where the capacitor came from. I showed where interstellar electric currents came from. I showed all of these details and completely reconstructed astrophysics, space science, and astronomy single-handedly, but was met by an absolute brick wall. And I couldn't work formally as a Tier 1 scientist, because in 1982, when I was in California, looking for funding for my projects, I told them, I said, I don't want my scientific research and development to be used for warfare. And they all looked at me like I was crazy out of my mind. What kind of guy would come in and say that and require that his inventions not be used for warfare? So I was sidelined from my very own projects. A little story here. Many years later, it was probably kind of the early 1990s, I had a discussion with a scientist from, he had worked in the aerospace industry, and we were talking. He was a physicist. He had worked in Colorado in a number of aerospace industries, and we were talking. And I started describing the projects that I had introduced into the military in 1982. And he stopped me after a certain point, and he said, stop. He said, there's no way you could know this unless you had an absolute top security clearance. He said, you're describing every program I've worked on as my career as a black ops scientist and physicist. He said, I can tell you this because you're explaining it to me. And he said, now I realize that you're the person that brought all this to the table. He worked on these projects. The government developed my projects and never let me come near them because I was not a team player for the warfare industry. So that's a Merry Christmas to you, Merry Christmas to me. But what I'm saying now is that this is changing, because what Trump is doing is opening up the floodgates to investment. And he's saying, okay, we're going to have investment. We're going to have private business. We're going to stop this chain of command where you bring in a proposal and you give it to NASA, and then NASA has to review it, and then they have to go through 27 chains of command levels before it ever gets up to Congress, and it gets eaten up in this absolutely corrupt system that has no interest in bringing new innovative change, because they already have their 10-year funding program in place, and they sure don't want something innovative in there that's going to ruin their funding that's already in the pipeline. So anyway, Trump is going to open up the floodgates for foreign investment. And as I believe I said at the earlier part of this show, already since Trump was elected, there were only about 5 weeks pre-president, he's not even president yet, $1.5 trillion have been commissioned by foreign businesses, by foreign entities, by U.S. companies holding their money offshore because of ludicrous tax laws. And so there's just going to be, the floodgates are just going to absolutely be opened, and it's going to go into the private space exploration industry. In 10 years, you're not going to recognize the devices used in outer space. The rockets and the garbage that have been pawned off on you, the public, you're going to look back and you're going to go, I can't believe those people that NASA in the space industry conned us for all those decades, thinking that that was the way to go into outer space, when it's not at all. And so the rush, and it's the beautiful thing for me is now I can come back and become an active member in the aerospace industry with all of my technology that I developed and literally was available in 1982. Imagine that. And this was because of my understanding of the electric nature of the solar system. I knew about the all of the conditions out there, how to make use of them, and using these for all kinds of developments relative to outer space. And remember that these have been provided for us. We're discovering these as we go along, but we had an obnoxiously repressive regime in NASA and the FAA. Remember that when the private space programs began, all of a sudden the FAA jumps up and says, the Federal Aviation Administration jumps up and says, hey, we want to be in charge of making sure everybody's safe to go into outer space. And that's when the private space program accidents started too. And then they go, oh, gee, we can't have anybody going into space on this equipment because it's failing. Remember that within a single month, there were three major accidents in manned space programs. One was the SpaceX, one was the Virgin Galactic, one where they had a pilot killed. And all of these were done by laser, some type of laser energy beam destruction of the rocket system while they were trying to function. The Burt Rutan, the Richard Branson experimental aircraft that crashed, the only accident that they've had, was because of a rocket failure, not because of the aileron failure that they claimed. So at any rate, and remember that they had an on-site rocket explosion, which I believe killed a person or two, out in the Mojave Desert, once again, that the system was sabotaged. No question in my mind at all. I can say that I'm not an owner, I'm not a stockholder, I'm not an engineer in that program, but when I saw the conditions and how close they were getting to succeeding, all of a sudden there's a major failure. And accidents happen. But when you start to see payloads exploding, like with SpaceX recently, and Elon Musk calling for an investigation, he better get wise to the people he's jumping into bed with financially, the CIA and the other boys, Google and Fidelity and those guys. You're not dealing with a full deck of cards. But that's the other issue with Trump, is getting rid of the old boy CIA school, and that's what has been controlling science. And that's why I had to sit on the sidelines. That's why my shows are interrupted. That's why I get hacked continually. That's when I come out with a new book, I get hacked. Those guys do not want you to be thinking independence, independent science, independent research, private space programs, because they consider outer space their private little playground. Because the CIA works directly for the World Bank, not the federal government. The only reason they have cooperated with the President of the United States is because he's a minion, he's a puppet of the World Bank also. So at any rate, you have to understand who's who, and then so you have the CIA, you have the FAA, and you have NASA, which have been blocking you and anybody else from going into private space programs and succeeding. So now we have the Bigelow Space, and they really have not had accidents, but the progress, let's just put it this way, the progress in outer space is going to become exponential. People who may be seen as major players now may not be major players in 2 to 5 years. It's like horses coming out of the gate at the Kentucky Derby. And the first horse hits the first turn and is in the lead. Okay, everybody's running, but somewhere back in the pack is what we call the dark horse. The one that's got all the good stuff, all the speed, all the right stuff. So when they come around the final bend into the home stretch, that horse is going to pull out, take off, and leave everybody else in the dust. That's what you're going to see. Because the Elon Musks, the Jeff Bezos, are going with old technology. They're investing a lot of money, doing a lot of wrong things, going in a lot of wrong directions. So it's going to be very interesting to see where this all ends up in 5 or 10 years. But that's the ticket with free competition. That's what we've never had before. We've had a space agency that's taken all of the development, all of the development money, put it in their own pockets, and done nothing. In fact, they've created accidents to make it look like it's so dangerous to go into outer space that only they can do it. And the FAA comes along and says, yep, we're going to have to prevent all these people from going into space. So a lot of the scientists who are starting to see this open up were of the belief that space was prohibited by the FAA for safety reasons. No. If they were worried about safety, why don't they limit and license surfboards where you go out and ride a wave, you know, almost naked with a little swimsuit on, and you're out in the middle of the ocean with the sharks flying around on this piece of wood on the ocean on a huge wave and get your head knocked off? They don't care about that. They don't care about other forms of safety. Why are they so worried about you going into space if that's what you want to do? It's because they don't want you going into space. I want to go, one of my first projects is to go into space and have a Planet X search program, a real one where there's real reporting back to you, the public. Wouldn't that be nice? You don't have to go to YouTube and watch Johnny J. Ding Dong sitting in his basement, in grandma's basement, telling you that Planet X is coming. You won't have to think about that anymore, because we're going to have a real search program with real data, with real reporting, something that, once again, was totally obscured by the CIA. That's just the beginning. So the floodgates are going to open. I'm going to become very active in projects like my wing generator to reduce our dependence on foreign and even domestic energy is going to be occurring. Yes, it's going to be a very different world. And thanks to deregulation, and we can start moving into the future with some sanity. I got a couple minutes left. Just want to wish you all a Merry Christmas. This is a super Merry Christmas for me, because my life dream of working on my science and being able to pursue it freely is now at my doorstep. So I'm very happy. Want to wish you a Merry Christmas. And this is the best Christmas present I could get. You know, talk about the person that has done everything he wanted in life, etc. But now the floodgates are going to be open. I'm more productive now than I ever have been in my life. I'm healthier than I've ever been in my life. And this is going to be a fun ride into the future. That's all I can tell you. Remember, go to my webpage. Due to Christmas, typically Christmas is a horribly slow time for me. And I have not missed any meals, but I have to continue the paying the bills here. So if you do need some water filter products, remember, mine are the best on the planet. The website, jmccsci.com, or join the paid cast. Or if you join the paid cast, give it away as a gift. What a wonderful gift. And then we'll just email us and we'll send the paid cast to the person that you designate in the email. So once again, Jim McCanny, Merry Christmas. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.